So here in Eretz Yisrael this week, we have the one parsha, Jes Behar. And next week, Jes Bechukosai. Next week, Mitzvah Hashem, our third son, Eliyahu, will be a bar mitzvah. So he was much relieved to find that he only has the one parsha, Bechukosai. It's another reason to be appreciative of living here in Israel. Behar, of course, has plenty to discuss. And we begin with the well-known Rashi at the beginning of the parsha. And I say, by way of preface, that we will be spending quite some time on this first Rashi to remind ourselves that although often Rashi is very quotable and one can perhaps use his words on a very straightforward level, but Rashi is a limud. Rashi is a study. And we will see I believe to be a most profound exposition of Rashi's words at the beginning of Behar. All I can say is, Meretz Hashem, by the time Wednesday night comes round and we're by the Lag BaOmer bonfire, we will have earned it. So Behar begins, of course, just introducing the mitzvah of Shemitah. And as is well known, there's already something to say in the first pasuk before anyone said anything about Shemitah. For the pasuk reads, Perek Kafhei, pasuk Aleph, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe behar Sinai lemor. And this is something of a departure from what we've become accustomed to seeing as the norm. The standard introduction is Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. As far as we're concerned, it's all at Sinai. It doesn't need to be mentioned, or certainly we don't need a special mention. And this begets the well-known question of Rashi, Ma inyan shmita etzel har Sinai? What is the special connection? What is behind this seemingly redundant reference of har Sinai, specifically with regard to the mitzvah of shmita? Ma inyan shmita etzel har Sinai? Why the special mention? All mitzvahs are said at Sinai. You seem to be stating the obvious. Rather, Elo, mash mito, it comes to teach us something about mitzvahs in general. Mash mito, in the same way that shmita ne'emru kloloseha uprotoseha v'dikdukeha misinai. Just like shmita was given in its entirety at Sinai, and that is really what we're learning from this special reference, as if to say, we know everything's from Sinai. And if the Torah makes a point of mentioning something's from Sinai, it means totally from Sinai, in its entirety from Sinai. Not only klolim, general principles, but also protim and dikdukim, also the minor details. So too, afkulon nemru klaloseim v'tiktukehem misina. And so too, all other mitzvahs were given not only the general principles, but also the particular details. Now we pause here, and the truth is that somewhat inaccurately, many people refer to what we have just said as the opening Rashi in Behar. Not yet. Rashi hasn't said anything yet. For everything that we have just read is actually Rashi quoting an earlier source, the Toras Kohanim. The Toras Kohanim, which is the Medrash Halacha on Chumash Vayikra. And we ourselves have stopped here in the past because there's already what to discuss, but Rashi hasn't said anything yet. We're halfway through. And Rashi himself, but today, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll see the whole Rashi. Kach shonei b'Toras Kohanim, what I've just told you, Shmita general in particular, so all mitzvahs general in particular, that's the Toras Kohanim, and says Rashi, let me tell you what I think this Toras Kohanim means. V'nirali shekach peirusha. Now, before we get to see how Rashi explains what the Toras Kohanim means, we must ask, why does he need to explain? Is it not self-explanatory? We've read and translated, it all seems perfectly in order. Why does Rashi feel that any words of explanation are in order? But the truth of the matter is, one does need to explain. Because the Toras Kohanim has made a leap from Shmita to other mitzvahs. As if to say, there's two parts really to our picture here. Number one, we see that something is stated in the context of Shemitah. Sinai is mentioned again, telling us completely from Sinai. That's all we have in front of us. So now the critical question is, okay, one down, 612 to go. As if to say, I've seen this, and I've received the message with regards to Shemitah, but what about all the other mitzvahs? There are still two possibilities. We're at a T-junction. You see, when the Torah mentions this specifically with reference to Shemitah, it could either be in order to represent the rest of Tariag mitzvahs, to represent the rule, or perhaps it could be to mark Shemitah as the exception to the rule. If all you see is a certain amount of information with regards to Shemitah, that means this is true for Shemitah and everything, or perhaps true for Shemitah alone. And therefore, Rashi says, I need to explain to you my understanding of how the Taras Kodim is able to make that second step, to go from Shemitah outwards to the rest of Torah. And here it is. V'nirli shekach pirusha. I think it means like this, says Rashi. Lefi shelo matzinu shmitas karkos shenishneis ba'arvos moav b'mishnah Torah. You see, if you look further in the Torah, specifically to Chumash Devarim, the plains of Moab, which was the last station of transmitting Torah, you will not find any reference to Shemitah of the land. Parenthetically, there is a mitzvah of Shemitah in Parshas Re'eh, but it's about canceling debts. But Shemitah of the land, you will not find. Aha! So Rashi says, if you don't find it later on, it means it must have been given in its entirety already. Lamadnu, from that we learn, Sheklaloseha or Protoseha Kulon Nemumi Sinai. If there's silence later on, it must be all the information was already given at Sinai. Aha. Now, if that's true, then now we're in an interesting situation. We don't even need the words Har Sinai in our Pasuk to teach us that the whole thing was given at Sinai. We can infer it from the silence of Sefer Devarim. The fact that there's no more information later on already tells us that the Shemitah was given in its entirety earlier on. And if that's the case, why does the Torah mention Har Sinai when I can already infer Har Sinai? That's now extraneous to tell me not only for Shemitah itself, but now for all other mitzvahs. It's now a redundant even in terms of that message. Uvo HaKosuf Elimed Kan. Al kol dibur shenidba lemoshe shemisinai hayu kulam klaloseim v'tiktu kehem, that they were all given, all mitzvahs were given general and particular v'chazur v'nishnu ba'avras moav, and then repeated later on by Moshe to Bnei Yisrael in the plains of Moav. Now, if we could summarize what we've seen so far, and it's just quote unquote bin Rashi so far, but important to keep a check on things. We have the extra words Bahar Sinai. They teach us that Shemitah was given entirely at Sinai. But Rashi says, I actually know it was given entirely at Sinai, even without those words, from the fact that there's nothing later on. Having mentioned those words and tell me what I already know, it means to hold Shemitah up not only for itself, but also for all mitzvahs. Now, in order to fully appreciate the background to Rashi's comment, we need to be aware of a major discussion that takes place between the great Tanoim, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yishmael with regards to tracking the transmission of mitzvahs. These discussions do not get bigger than this, to understand how the Torah came from Hashem through Moshe to Bnei Yisrael. And we will say by way of introduction that there are three stations of transmitting Torah. There is station one, Har Sinai. Then station two, Ohel Moed, because as we know, there was continual transmission. V'no'adati l'chasham mibein ha'kruvim. Hashem continues to transmit to Moshe in the Mishkan, wherever they are. And number three, Arvas Moav, the plains of Moab, just before coming into Eretz Canaan. So once again, we have one, Har Sinai, two, Ohel Moed, and three, the plains of Moab. And now the question is, what was given where? And here we have a major dispute between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. According to Rabbi Akiva, the answer is all things everywhere. That is to say, the mitzvahs, all 613 mitzvahs, are given both klalim and protim in their entirety in all three places. Nemru b'Sinai, They were all said at Sinai. Nishnu bat be ohel moed, said again in the Mishkan. V'nishtalshu, and then said for a third time in Arvos Moav. So that is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Everything three times over. In contrast, Rabbi Shmuel sees something more of a slower release of Torah. According to Rabbi Shmuel, actually, in station one at Har Sinai, we received only the klalim, only the mitzvahs in their general principles. Station two, the Mishkan, is where we received the pratim. And then everything was said over a second time, v'nishnu ba'arvos moav. And so once again, to be completely clear, according to Rabbi Akiva, general and particular were given in all three stations, Sinai, Ohel Moed, and Arvos Moav. For Rabbi Shmuel, general at Sinai, particular in Ohel Moed, and then everything again in Arvos Moav. Which means, if we were to ask ourselves, who does Rashi, quote-unquote, Paskin-like, in this machlokus, we now know that the answer is Rabbi Akiva. That means that the Rashi is taking a side, which he has to, if it's a machlokus, you have to take a side, and the side he's taken is Rabbi Akiva. In his words, just like Shmita was klalim and pratim at Sinai, so too all mitzvahs, klalim and pratim at Sinai. I mean, that's got Rabbi Akiva written all over it. Okay. Interestingly, and this is where the plot begins to thicken, Rashi elsewhere seems to have sided with Rabbi Yishmael. Where? We've already seen it. We may not have noticed it as such. The very first Rashi in Parshas Mishpatim. How does Mishpatim begin? Ve'eile ha-Mishpatim. And there's already a Rashi. The Pasuk's barely said anything and Rashi's already commenting. Because Mishpatim begins with the letter Vav. And Rashi says, you know, there's two ways for the Torah to introduce something. It can introduce something with the word Eile, like Eile told us Noach. And it can introduce with a Vav, V'Eile, like V'Eile HaMishpatim. What's the difference between Eile and V'Eile? So in Rashi's words, Kol Makom Sheneemar Eile, whenever the Torah introduces with Eile, it's a clean break from that which was before. Pasal HaSarishonus, it means to discard that which was mentioned before. Like Noach, everyone that came before him, not such a groisa gedula. Noach is different. Eile told us Noach. New thing. V'eile, says Rashi, mosif al rishonu. It comes to connect this, what we're about to say, with what we've already said. Which means we're looking to connect the beginning of Mishpatim with the end of Yisro. The end of Yisro is the Aseres HaDibros. But what's the connection? To teach you, ma rishonim misinai, af elu misinai. Just like the first ones were from Sinai, Aseres HaDibros, so too, elu mishpatim is also from Sinai. That's what we learn from the Vav, the linking word, the Eile. And of course the question is, what type of a lesson is that? I mean, I think I knew that already. Anyone who knows anything knows that the mitzvahs were given at Sinai. It sounds like there's something special about the contents of Mishpatim. It's like the Aseres HaDibros. Just like they're from Sinai, so too these are from Sinai. Everything's from Sinai. So manishtana, parsha zos, mikola parshios, that it's linked with a Vav. And that is why Mefarshim say that this Rashi reflects the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael. As if to say, yes, all mitzvahs were given at Sinai, but only the klalim. That's Rabbi Yishmael. What's special about Parshas Mishpat, the contents of Mishpatim, is that, like the Aseres HaDibros that were given in their entirety at Sinai, so too the contents of Mishpatim are given in their entirety of Sinai. But that's exceptional. It's exceptional to the rule. Because for Rabbi Yishmael, the rule is that Sinai, you'll find only klalim. If Mishpatim has also pratim, that makes it unique. That's what the Vav links. And therefore this Rashi represents the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, and in fact, confirmation of that, is that Rashi's source of this Ve'ele, the Vav and Ve'ele, it's in the Mechilta. The Mechilta was redacted by Rabbi Shmuel. It's known as the Mechilta of Rabbi Shmuel. And in fact, the Mechilta there states explicitly, these are the words of Rabbi Shmuel. I don't think we could have more of a stamp than that. And that puts us in an interesting situation. I'm not sure if it's an awkward situation or a difficult situation, but it is interesting. Because if you look at Rashi in Mishpatim, he seems to have thrown his lot in with Rabbi Yishmael. But if you look at the well-known Rashi at the beginning of Bahar, he seems to go like Rabbi Akiva. That sounds like a contradiction, and maybe that's okay. Rabbeinu Eliyom Mizrahi is famous for saying that Rashi's job is not to be consistent. Rashi's job is to give you the most straightforward understanding of any given pasuk at any given time. If this is like this, you're going to have to work out the other one. Work it out. Rashi left something for the rest of the Jewish people. But his job is to give you the best reading at any given time, even though there could be inconsistencies. That's the well-known position of Mizrahi. And seemingly, I believe even he quotes this as an example. But there may be more. I would like to raise an interesting question. Let's go back to the point, and we have to keep a watchful eye on the discourse here. Let's go back to the point where Rashi says, you know, I know that Shemitah was given entirely at Sinai, even without the pasuk saying Har Sinai. You know why I know that? Because it's not mentioned in Chumash Devarim. From the silence in our term, in our phraseology, from the silence of Chumash Devarim, I infer it's already been completely at Sinai. However, Mefarshim ask, that's not so straightforward. That's not necessarily so. For a simple reason. We mentioned there are three stations. Station one is Har Sinai. Two is Ohel Moed. And three is Arvos Moav. Now, if you have three stations and nothing is mentioned in station three, the only thing you know for sure is that it's already been completely given before station three. That leaves you with two options, called one and two. And you cannot know, just from the fact that it doesn't feature in station three, which of the first two. And if you cannot know, then when the pasuk says Behar Sinai, you cannot claim that that's redundant. You cannot say, oh, I'd know that anyway. You wouldn't know that. Maybe it's Ohel Moed. Maybe it's station two. You just know that it's not number three. I mean, that's simple deductive logic. Which means if we don't have proof positive from the silence of Devarim, we need the word Har Sinai to tell us of one and two, it was station one. It's not redundant. And if it's not redundant, our transmitter for the rest of Torah is breaking down. That's an interesting question. Well, the one who's going to make Seder here for us in this Rashi is a sefer called Or Yosher. Or Yosher by Rabbi Binyamin Zev Hartman. It's a very unique perush. I've only ever seen two copies of this sefer. One was my father's and the other was Rev Cooperman's. I don't know, it's not such a well-known sefer, but it is gold. And he draws our attention to a pasuk at the end of Kisavo. As we know, there are two tochachas in the Torah. One is in next week's Parsha, B'chukosai, and the other is in Parsha's Kisavo, Be'arvos Moav. Now, if you look there, the pasuk says, in conclusion of the second tochacha, roughly paraphrasing, I don't have the pasuk in front of me, but Eile divrei habris, asher amar Moshe levnei Yisrael, these are the words of the covenant, milvad habris asher karas itam b'chorev. B'chorev. In addition to the bris, namely the tochacha that was said at chorev. Now, the pasuk explicitly tells us that the first tochacha was said in chorev. Now it's clear from the relevant sugyas in the Gemara that there was no tochacha until all the mitzvahs had been entirely given. You can't give them just generally and already have a tochacha. The tochacha comes in when everything has been given, which means until the details of the mitzvahs have been given, you don't have a first tochacha. So that's very interesting. Because to say that the first tochacha was said at chorev, which is a watchword for Sinai, you're basically telling me the entire Torah has already been given at Sinai. That then you can cap it with a tochacha. But that seems to be explicit in the pasuk, like Rabbi Akiva, who says the entire Torah is given at Sinai. What would Rabbi Yishmael say to that pasuk? He has to answer to the pasuk. So Rashi explains in Masechet Sota and Daf Lamed Zayin. Rashi says for Rabbi Yishmael, Sinai and Ohel Moed, it's all called Sinai. In other words, we got the general at Sinai, the particulars in Oel Moed, that's when we had the Tochacha, and the Pasuk calls it Chorev, i.e. Sinai, because it's all called Sinai. Now that's easier said than done, because it doesn't sound like Sinai. As if to say, what does Rashi mean to say by telling us that, listen, it's Sinai, but it's Oel Moed, but we can all call it Sinai. Why are you calling it Sinai if there's another station involved? So the Or Yosher says very simply, the truth of the matter is, when you look a bit further, you will see that even station number 2, Oel Moed, basically also happened at Sinai. In other words, we picture in our minds Oel Moed, and it's the Mishkan, and we had the Mishkan for 40 years, and therefore Oel Moed represents 40 years of transmission. But that's not so, because Rashi tells us in Chumash Devarim that in the 38 years between the sending of the Meraglim and that whole generation dying out, there was no transmission of mitzvahs in the Mishkan until we got to the plains of Moab. Which means, effectively, for all that we look at the Oel Moed as station 2, but Lemaisa, there was only transmission of Torah in station 2 when we were still in camp by station 1, which is at Har Sinai for over a year, or just under a year. And that, says the Or Yosher, is why Rashi says that Sinai and Oel Moed can all be called Sinai. It doesn't mean Har Sinai. It doesn't mean on top of the mountain. But it means in the region of Sinai. Because when we moved on, there's no transmission in Oel Moed anyway. And that's why even Oel Moed is referred to as Sinai. It turns out, therefore, that when we refer to Sinai, what are we talking about? The answer will differ drastically depending on whether you're Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Yishmael. If you're Rabbi Akiva, it means Sinai the mountain and not Oel Moed. If you're Rabbi Yishmael, it's Sinai the area including Oel Moed. That is a major statement that, of course, fits in perfectly. Now, once that's true, and hopefully we're clear to this point, so we have to ask perhaps a disarming question. Namely, if both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael have their renditions of what Sinai means, again, for Rabbi Akiva, the mountain, for Rabbi Yishmael, the region, then go back to Rashi in the beginning of Bahar and ask ourselves, what is he referring to when he says all mitzvahs were given in general and particular at Sinai? We assume that when Rashi says at Sinai, he meant at Har Sinai, like Rabbi Akiva. But could it be that when Rashi says they were all given at Sinai, he actually means like Rabbi Yishmael, as if to say, in the region of Sinai, general in the mountain, particulars in Oel Moed, at Sinai. But that's all called Sinai. That now becomes a possibility. Says Or Yosher, not only is it a possibility, it actually is a probability, and possibly even a definicy. For a simple reason. Rashi's concluding words, and again just to read them, is we learn that the diklalim and protim of all mitzvahs were given at Sinai. V'chazru v'nishnu ba'arvos Moav, and were then said a second time at Arvos Moav. Now those words are very sensitive, because Rashi is saying everything is given at Sinai, and then said a second time at Arvos Moav. But let's ask ourselves, whose opinion does that reflect? We always assumed Rabbi Akiva, says Or Yosher. Rabbi Akiva? Arvos Moav is not when they were said for a second time. It's when they were said for the third time. Because for Rabbi Akiva, everything's at Sinai, then a second time in Oel Moed, and a third time in Arvos Moav. If this Rashi reflects the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, so Rashi should have said that they were said Nishdalshu in Arvos Moav. How can he say Nishmu? That sounds like Rabbi Yishmael. Says the Or Yosher, yes, it is Rabbi Yishmael. This opening Rashi in Parshas Bahar actually reflects the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael. And once we understand that, we can appreciate how the question we raised on Rashi before goes away. Our question was, how do you know from the silence of Shemitah, the absence of Shemitah in Devarim, that it was said at Sinai, namely station one? Maybe it was station two. That's a question only according to Rabbi Akiva. But according to Rabbi Yishmael, stations one and two are the same. And Rashi's referring to both of them collectively as Sinai. If Sinai represents one and two, I can certainly infer from the silence in station three that it's in one of those two, and Rashi's point then emerges from there. So this, as I say, the Or Yashar, he is taking on more or less the accepted understanding of this Rashi. But according to him, there is no longer a contradiction in any sense between the Rashi in the beginning of Bahar and the Rashi in the beginning of Mishpatim. Rashi in the beginning of Mishpatim, we noted, the Vav links Mishpatim to Sinai, meaning these were special. They were given entirely at Sinai, unlike the rest of mitzvahs. That's Rabbi Yishmael. How then can Rashi in Bahar tell us that all mitzvahs were given with their details at Sinai? But both are Rabbi Yishmael, even the Rashi in Bahar. When Rashi refers to Sinai, he talks about the region of Sinai, which is Har Sinai plus Ohel Moed. So this is a major statement on the part of the Yashar. Students of Rashi should be sent reeling from this approach to Rashi. And he concludes in a most wonderful way by taking us to the final pasuk of Parshas Bechukosai. So we yet get a chance to preview the end of Bechukosai. Now, how does the pasuk read? No need to stand. Eile ha-mitzvos, asher tziva Hashem es Moshe el bnei Yisrael b'har Sinai. This is a concluding pasuk of the entire Chumash Devarim, and reads, translate simply, these are the mitzvos that had... Pardon me? What did I say?
Devarim.
Pardon me. The conclusion of Chumash Vayikra. Eile ha-mitzvos, asher tziva Hashem es Moshe el bnei Yisrael. These are the mitzvos that Hashem commanded Moshe to tell bnei Yisrael the Har Sinai. Now, we're just looking at the words. But what's so interesting about this pasuk is that the concluding pasuk of Chumash Vayikra says that all of these mitzvos were said at Har Sinai. Okay. That's the concluding pasuk. Now go to the opening pasuk of Vayikra, which begins, Vayikra al Moshe, Vayidaber Hashem Elav, Me Ohel Moed Lemor. So we're in rather an unusual situation, because if we get down to the particulars, we know that Har Sinai is station one and Ohel Moed is station two. Yet Chumash Vayikra opened with Ohel Moed, the later station, and then concluded with Har Sinai, which is the earlier station. That's backwards. What are we to make of that? What's the message? Says the Or Yashar, the message is most profound, but it will differ depending on who you are. Rabbi Akiva will look at this pasuk one way, and Rabbi Shmuel will look at the pasuk another way. For Rabbi Akiva, the whole point of this pasuk is that as much as all of these things were said in Ohel Moed, yes, but you need to know, as the Chumash concludes, that these things had also been said at Har Sinai. Because as surely as we have Klalim and Pratim in Ohel Moed, station 2, we already had them in station 1. That's the meaning of the pasuk according to Rabbi Akiva. The whole contents of Vayikra has been in Ohel Moed. And the Chumash just leaves us with this message that everything we've just said, you should know Hashem had also commanded Moshe at Har Sinai. Because Klalim and Pratim were given at Sinai before being said again in Ohel Moed. That's Rabbi Akiva. For Rabbi Shmuel, it's quite different. Namely, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the pasuk here isn't coming to discuss Sinai as opposed to Ohel Moed, but rather it's coming to define everything that we've said is still called Har Sinai, because as far as Rabbi Shmuel is concerned, the region of Har Sinai includes Ohel Moed, and that's why the pasuk concludes, as if to say, the Chumash Vayikra introduces things that were said in the Ohel Moed, but all of that happened around Har Sinai. And it's coming to frame for us the time that we call Ohel Moed is still around the environs of Sinai. So, as I said, this is quite a major discussion of the Rashi. It's not the only approach to Rashi, but certainly one that deserves our attention for this year. And so from here, I'd like to move on, actually, to a pasuk later on. Parshas Behar is almost all one perek, perek kafhei, pasuk mem. And again, just to see a point of parshanut, which is most illuminating. And if we start with pasuk lamed tes, v'chiyamuch achicha v'nimkar lach. So Parshas Behar, interestingly, another association with Parshas Mishpatim, they both deal with Eved Ivri, just a different type of Eved Ivri. Parshas Mishpatim deals with Eved Ivri, he stole and he couldn't pay back. That's criminal Eved Ivri. Parshas Behar deals with a destitutional Eved Ivri. Parshas doesn't have money, so for lack of means, he needs to sell himself as a servant. And that's whether the halachas are the same or different, is a sugya in the Gemara and Kiddushin. But in any case, our psukim say, "V'chiyamuch achicha imach v'nimkalach." What if your brother falls in hard times? He falters. He sold to you. Lo savod ba'avodas oved. You cannot treat him in a demeaning way. You cannot make him work like a slave in a demeaning way. Kischek tashav yehimach. He should be like a hired worker. Achnas hayovel yavod imach until the yovel. Okay. Now, again, the simple reading and translating, if he falls in hard times, he sold to you, nothing demeaning, should be respectful, that's also important. He needs to work, he doesn't need to be degraded. Okay. Now, what's interesting about our pasuk is that it is highlighted by Tosfos in a number of places for the following reason. There's a well-known statement of the Gemara which says that the Eved Ivri, he needs to be like you. He needs to be treated like you. And what does that mean? It means a number of things. It means, for example, working hours. You can't make him work day and night. Do you work day and night? Well, people didn't used to. And therefore, so you can't work him day and night. He's got to be like you. Imach, like you. Do you need to provide food for him? Yes, just like you. Where does that come from? Ima, just like you. The question is, where is this word imach quoted from? Where is it taken from? Now, there is a prevalent notion, and there are even some versions of the Gemara which have this, that the word imach is actually sourced in Parshas Re'eh, where it says, let's say the slave, servant doesn't want to go free, ki tov lo imach, he has it good by you. And some say, oh, you see, of course he has it good by you, because you've got to treat him well, you've got to treat him like you. There's a famous, I think it's the Yerushalmi, says, you can't sleep with a pillow. If he doesn't have a pillow, ad kedei kach. Which means if there's only one, he's got to have it. It's a serious undertaking to acquire a servant. A well-known statement of the Gemara, kala kona eved kona odana atzmo, stated rather ironically. If you buy a servant, you bought a master, you've really got to take very good care of him. Most masters would like to be taken care of the way the Torah says take care of a servant. But be that as it may. And therefore, you see, kitov lo imach, and the word imach, as the Gemara says, means he's like you. Equivalent conditions. Now, Tosfos, in no less than three places in Shas, in Maseches Ksubas, and in Maseches Kedushin, and in Maseches Bava Kamma, all make the same comment. And that is, do not understand, or do not misunderstand, that the word imach, that the Gemara is discussing, comes from that pasuk in Re'eh. It does not come from Re'eh. Okay. Well, firstly, where does it come from? And secondly, why is it so important to emphasize that it doesn't come from Re'eh? So first things first. If you want to know where it comes from, says Tosos, it's the imach in Parshas Behar. In Pasuk Mem, that we just mentioned. Namely, the words, Kisachir Kitoshav Yihyeh Imach. That's the source of the Imach that we darshan. And then says Tosus, why am I so insistent about this? What difference does it make? Imach is Imach, it's written the same. what difference does it make which one you choose? But in Tosus's words, Darish law, this drasha of equivalent conditions comes from Kisachir Ketoshab Yeimach, our parsha, Behar. Umiyutar hu imach. The word imach is really redundant. Why? It could have just said he should be like a paid worker until the Yovel. So it didn't really need to say imach. And because it's redundant, so we darshan it. That's Drash's job. That's Medrash's job, to expound on words that are redundant. But the other pasuk in Re'ei, aval, quote, ki tov lo imach, end quote, eino ela sipur devarim be'alma. That's not a mitzvah. It's a description. It's a narrative. I mean, the words are, and it could, let's see, he doesn't want to go because he has it good with you. Okay, you've got to know how to deal with it. It's the Yovel, and he gets his ear pierced and the whole thing. But those words, they're descriptive in nature. They're not imperative in nature. And really, the point that Tosus is saying is, mitzvahs can't come from descriptions. Mitzvahs come from instructions. The difference between our pasuk, our imach, and the later imach, is that our imach is a mitzvah. He shall be like that. Kisachir ketoshav yihyeh imach. That's how he needs to be. So within the context of the Torah saying how he needs to be, I can darshan a pasuk exactly how he needs to be, equivalent, imach. But in a pasuk which isn't instructing, but merely describing or narrating, so I don't get a mitzvah from there. I might say, listen, some masters treat the servants well, some don't. And if you're very nice to him, he may want to stay on. And if you're not, he won't. But the Torah is not discussing what you need to do. And that is why Tosfos are so insistent that the imach comes from Behar. Now, why is this such a fascinating point? This is discussed by Rav Kupperman. That's how in his Sefer Pshuto Shamikra. You see, there's no question. We have identified a different pshat context between the two psukim. Our pasuk in Behar is tzivui, an imperative, and the pasuk later on in Re'ei is sipur, narrative, quite so. Tzivui and sipur are pshat concepts. To look at the grammatical or syntactical form of a pasuk, is it commanding, is it describing? That's Loshon HaKodesh, that's pshat. But this halacha of equivalent conditions, it's not born of pshat. Because the pshat just says he's with you. It doesn't mean he's like you. That's a drash. And it could be that the pshat doesn't even see it as redundant, because the pshat, as we know, is not as sensitive as the drash to redundancy. It's not so quick to say that things are redundant. The difference between pshat and drash is that the pshat is not looking for trouble. The pshat is looking for a clear reading. If you can make your way from one end of the pasuk to the other with no obvious problems, we're not looking for trouble. But the drash is, in the sense that the drash will go back again and say, but did we really need that word? I know, that doesn't stand out. But could we have done without it? And if we could, now it stands out. That's the much more sensitive or much higher level of scrutiny that drash exerts on the words of the pasuk. As we've mentioned from the Maharal in the past, the word lidrosh, which we translate as to expound or to darshan, the word lidrosh means to seek out. Dirshu means to seek out. What are you seeking out? You're seeking out a full resolution of everything. Things that otherwise you may not have noticed, but go back for them and look after them, and then you'll begin to notice these things. So imach, as the source of this halacha of equivalent conditions, it's a product of drash. But once it's a product of drash, wouldn't there be room to say, so I no longer care, so to speak, as to whether the pasuk itself is a pasuk of, the pshat says it's like an imperative, or the pshat says it's like a narrative. I'm not in the realms of pshat anymore. If I stayed within the realms of pshat, I wouldn't learn anything from this word. So I've shifted my lens to drash. But once drash no longer is based on the pshat, so what difference does it make whether the pshat establishes this pasuk as a command as opposed to a narrative? I've left pshat behind. I'm in Drash. Interesting Shaila. Says Rav Kuppa, but what do we see from here? We see that as much as Pshat and Drash are two separate domains, are two separate realms, or two separate disciplines, but they are not absolutely distinct from each other or detached from each other, to the extent that it is true that Pshat doesn't have much to say halachically from the word imach. That may be true. For that I need Drash. But the Drash is not blind to the framework that has been established by Pshat. It's not indifferent to the context that's been established by Pshat. As if to say, the Pshat is not going to get me this halacha, but it will give me the scenery. It will give me the time. It will tell me my possibilities that Pshat can then take off. As if to say, even if Drash is not Pshat, it can't darshan a mitzvah if the Pshat didn't establish this as a mitzvah phrase or pasuk. And that is why, says Tosis, it's such a wonderful, rather delicate, but very important observation, really, on Rav Kuperman's part, that even though Imach is Drash, but the Drash is enabled, it's colored by the Pshat. And if you want to darshan a halacha, it's got to be a halachic friendly pasuk, even in terms of Pshat. That's our parsha, not the later parsha. So that's a very fascinating comment from Rav Kuperman. Well, let's come back now to the mitzvahs at the beginning of Bahar. As we know, we have the mitzvah of Shemitah, and following on that, we have the mitzvah of Yovel. And there's an interesting question, actually, that's raised by Mefarshim, or they don't even raise it, they just talk about it, and that is, what does the word Yovel mean? Now, Shemitah means to release, because you're released from working on the ground. Either the ground is released from you, or you're released from the ground. Tatlis, the two do not meet. But what then is the meaning of the word Yovel? And as we know, the word Yovel is commonly rendered in English as Jubilee, which is really a symptom of how difficult it is to translate, because it hasn't been translated at all. But if you just transliterate it, then you don't have a chance of working out what it actually means. There is a concept of something being lost in translation, but lost in transliteration is for sure, that's a certainty. So what does it mean? Rashi comments in Pasuk Yud, but that's where we find the word Yovel. Umashema, says Rashi, what's the name of this year? Yovel. It's called Yovel. Yovel Shema. Al Shem Tekias Shofar. Wow. Rashi says, if you want to know why the Yovel is called the Yovel, it's because one of the key mitzvahs in the Yovel year, Va'avartem Shofar Tru'ah, is to sound the shofar, as we know, which happens on Yom Kippur. Therefore, and the shofar is called the Yovel. Where do we see the shofar is called the Yovel? In Matan Torah. Bim Shocha Yovel, He Mayalu Bahar. So there was a shofar at Matan Torah, and that shofar is called a Yovel. So Yovel is the name of a shofar, and the year gets its name, Yovel, it's a Chiddush, after that shofar. We would have thought that of the special mitzvahs, so to speak, of Yovel, that is to say the unique mitzvahs, of all Avodim go free. Even if they stayed, you can't stay, everyone must go. All land that was sold gets sent back. Those are major mitzvahs. And number three, the shofar sounded. We may have looked upon that perhaps as one of the less impactful of the three. But actually, it says Rashi, the entire year gets its name as a result of that shofar. Okay? Ramban, however, raises difficulties. He has difficulties with this Rashi. Firstly, says Ramban, if the word Yovel is a reference to the shofar, so why is it that in the pasuk which talks about the shofar doesn't call it Yovel? It's only the next pasuk which talks about other things that calls it Yovel. That's a little bit, in terms of the allocation of terminology, seems to be somewhat mismatched. Pasuk Tes talks about the shofar. Vavarta shofar trua b'chodesh hashvi. It doesn't call it Yovel. In the next pasuk where it says ukrosim dror, proclaim freedom, cry freedom, ba'aretz lechol yoshveha, Yoveli. So that's a straightforward question. How is it that the very aspect that gives it its name is not even mentioned in the same pasuk as when it gets its name. No doubt, Rashi has an answer, and Mefarshe Rashi will answer, but that's Ramban's first question. And the second question is, and this Ramban contends, Yovel actually does not mean any type of shofar. It happens to be that Yovel is specifically the shofar of a ram. Okay, why is that a problem? Because we are not aware that the shofar of Yovel needs to be a ram. In fact, a ram's form. In fact, if you look in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, you will see that it is actually should be of a deer. Shel Ya'el Pashut. Not Shel Ayel Kafuf. So that Ramban maintains that it's a very specific type of shofar, and it's not specific to Yovel. Okay. What then is the meaning of the word Yovel according to Ramban? Well, says Ramban, the word Yovel comes from the word lehovil, which means to lead. Lehavdil, if you're familiar with the term hovala, delivery, which sometimes itself can take the better part of 50 years. So Yovel means deliver. And what does it mean? It means because basically everything is delivered back to where it came from. All the land goes back to where it came from. All the people go back to where they come from. And that's called Yovel. Ukros and droba aris lechol yoshveha. People are delivered back home. It's very interesting. Yovel, right, is what the land delivers. Yes? So that's the Ramban. Very interesting machlokas. Rishonim, in the meaning of the word Yovel. interesting, just a third approach, which is from the Ksava Kabbalah, Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, is he relates as often he has a very broad understanding of the possibilities of what a word might mean. It's quite an experience to see the discussions of the Ksava Kabbalah, but he explains that the word Yovel, the root is really the base and the lamed, and base and lamed is the root of the term of balul, or bilbul, which is mixing in, or mixing up, or shaking up, like mabul, really. And what does that mean? It means, says Ksava Kabbalah, paraphrasing slightly, but Yovel, it really is a kind of a shake-up year. It shakes up definitions. That is to say, there were very set definitions, for example, of ownership. And identity. A person really had a set definition of his own status as a servant. That's how he was. That gets shaken up now in the Yovel. And this has been his field for 35 years. But it comes Yovel. It gets shaken up. And that's why the Yovel is called that. It's Mivalel or Mivabel, says the Ksava Kabbalah. Very, and it is a shake-up. And the truth is, and so I came across a number of years ago a very interesting comment from the Sichos of Rabbi Isaac Scher. Rabbi Isaac Scher, Zatzal, who was the son-in-law of the Altar of Slabodka, of Nosson Zvi Finkel, and he took over as the Rosh Yeshiva of Slabodka. And here in the Bnei Brak as well, the Slabodka Yeshiva. And a very, very special person. And he had a certain comment with regards to perhaps people who tend to oversimplify, or maybe for convenience, they look for categorizations of certain mitzvahs, which really is not representative of the nature of the mitzvah at all. And what's an example? Says of Isaac Scher, you know, some people, the Torah says, listen, when the Yovel comes, all slaves go free. And there are some people who have, shall we say, a rather superficial view of things and interpretation of things, and they look upon this as almost like your classic human rights, the Torah, sticking up for the individual. It's like the ideal bin Adam lechaveiro. You've got to let him free, you can't hold him on anymore. The truth of the matter is, says Rabbi Isaac Scher, from a certain point of view, nothing could be further from the truth. Firstly, the Pasuk says the exact opposite. The Pasuk says the reason why you have to let him free is because you're all my servants, which is actually very bin Adam lamokam sounding. That's number one. But number two, says Rabbi Isaac Scher, a servant who's been indentured that long, do you think he really wants to go free? If he's been with you for 40 years, and let's say he came when he was 20, so many, many decades he spent, this is familiar for him. If you would ask him, he'd like to stay on. What his remaining years, now, at this advanced stage, to go out, to have to fend for himself. He's established himself here. He has what he needs. It's familiar. It's secure. Freedom can be insecure. That's at the best of times. Even when one starts out, certainly at a there may be many servants who are almost drag kicking and screaming from their servitude in the Yovel year. But the Torah says, but at a certain point, you can't stay there anymore. It is incorrect. It is untrue for you to live your entire life as a servant. But that's Ben Adam Namakom. Very interesting. But that's a shake-up. That's a Bilbul. These are the words of the of Rabbi Isaac Scher. Very interesting insight. And the question is, what are we to learn from Yovel? Yovel comes once every 50 years, and what's the message of Yovel? Well, this matter is discussed by the Sefer HaChinuch, and as we can pretty much see from the words of the Psukim themselves, it's about recognizing who ultimately owns the Jewish people, who ultimately owns Eretz Yisrael. These are things that we need to recognize. But then the Sefer HaChinuch says a very interesting thing, and that is, the Torah gives us a mitzvah not only to have Yovel once every 50 years, but to count towards it. As we mentioned last week, and it's in the pasuk here, v'safar talacha, sheva shavshosanim, sheva shanim, sheva pamim. You got to count 7 years. And as we said, it's a mitzvah for the Beis Din, and it's something that happens every year. Beis Din counts. I think the Ramban even discusses, perhaps they even make a bracha. It's mamash, like we make a bracha, al sfiras ha'omer. They make a bracha every year, al sfiras shmita v'yovel. Now, not every mitzvah of counting involves a formal act of counting. Sometimes it just means keeping track of time. When it comes to the earlier situations in Chumash Vayikra, of Zav and Zava, they need their 7 days. No one needs to count. You don't make a bracha. Al sfiras hadays, al sfiras hayamim, you just keep track of time. But when it comes here, it's a proclamation. It's a pronouncement. Here we are in the Yovel cycle. Why is it so important? Says the Sefer HaChinuch, such a simple but resounding idea. You have to count every year where you are in the Yovel cycle because that's a way of preserving an awareness of the Yovel for the other 49 years. Because otherwise, if you're someone who didn't reach maturity by the time the last Yovel came by, and it's going to be 50 years till the next one, so this in such an impactful message of the Yovel, it's lost on him. You can't operate on Yovel terms every year, because otherwise no one ever owns anything, and no one can pay off their debts, etc. and so forth. So there's a reason why it doesn't actually practically impact on things and assert itself, except once every 50 years. That may well be. But the message is important for every year. If the message is ultimately Hashem owns the land, that's something that you need to remember every year. And that's why it's almost as if the message of Yovel, it stays with you. How does it stay with you? By remembering every year and by saying every year, where are we in the Yovel? It's not Yovel conditions, but it should be Yovel, the Yovel message should also then feature in. As if to say, if when it comes to Yovel, you need to give back the land because the land belongs to Hashem, so even in all those years where you keep the land, but don't forget the message of Yovel. That's what comes through in the counting. So these are the words of the Sefer HaChinuch. But if we may, just for the final few moments, take a look at a most wonderful approach to Shmita and Yovel, which are of course the primary mitzvahs of the first half of the Parsha, which is to be found in the Perush of the Abarbanel. Abarbanel explains. You wish to understand the meaning of the Shmita year, once every 7 years, and the Yovel year, once every 50 years. It's as follows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has basically given the Jewish people two gifts. I mean, he has given all of existence. Number one, the actual physical world, life. And that's for the guf, that's for the body. But then he's also given us the Torah. That's for the nefesh. And Shmita and Yovel are ways of recognizing and celebrating and appreciating those two gifts. Shmita represents our appreciation of the physical world, and Yovel represents our appreciation of the spiritual program that has been given to us, known as the Torah. To begin with Shmita, well, Shmita, of course, it's so closely associated with Shabbos. Like Shabbos, it's a way of commemorating Hashem created the world, Sayomas Kalar Shabbam, etc. and so forth. It's called Shabbos Lashem. And that's why it follows the same pattern. You've got the six years that you work, the 7th year that you rest, and it's almost like a macro Shabbos in that way, and shares the same message. Appreciation of Hashem as creator of the world, which he then gave to us. That's the Shmita. Shmita is like Shabbos, representing the world. And then we come to Yovel. And Yovel, and once he says it, as is often the case, as soon as he says it, you begin to see it. And then everything falls into place. Says the Abarbanel, Yovel is really about appreciation of Torah. How so? Well, firstly, it's the 50th year. In the same way that Torah was given on the 50th day. And we have a parallel mitzvah. As surely as we have the mitzvah of counting days and weeks leading up to Shavuos, leading up to the 50th day of Matan Torah, so too in years you have the mitzvah of counting years and Shmita cycles until you get to year 50. Furthermore, says Abarbanel, the whole thing starts. What's the sound? What sets the tone, literally, for Yovel? Is the shofar. Our first encounter with the shofar was Har Sinai. And moreover, as we mentioned earlier on, but it assumes now new significance, the shofar at Matan Torah is called the Yovel. And therefore, he explains that Yovel really is to remember that whole ma'amad in year terms, to remember that occasion, which began with the Yovel, B'mshoch HaYovel. And what are the other special mitzvahs of Yovel? All slaves are set free. It's a time of freedom. It's once again, it's a macro exodus, really, emancipation. Why? Because that's what happened at Har Sinai. Abarbanel, as with many others, explains that the culmination of Yetzias Mitzrayim took place with Matan Torah, because, as we say, Ein lecha ben chorin ela mi she'osek b'Torah. That means, amongst other things, that, as we discussed on a number of occasions, leaving Mitzrayim is a negative experience. It just tells you what you're not. You're no longer a slave to Paro, but it doesn't yet tell you what you are. And therefore, that continuum, which takes us from Mitzrayim to Matan Torah, that is the full realization of the purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that makes it the culmination of the exodus from Mitzrayim. And that is why Abarbanel, as others explain, that when Hashem says, in the beginning of Aseres HaDibros, which we'll read on Shavuos, Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, I am Hashem, I took you out of Mitzrayim, that's not a reference to a past event. It is a statement of what has just happened now. As if to say, with the revelation at Sinai, Yetzias Mitzrayim has just now been completed. With this, Asher Hotzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. And therefore, in recognition of that, everyone goes free. All Avodim go free. And what else returns? Acquisitions. Why? There's an element almost of hefkerus. People lose their ownership of things. Says Abarbanel, yes, that's also important. It's also important for Shavuos. It's also important for Torah. Because if a person becomes so fixated on their acquisitions and on their property, they'll never be able to apply themselves to Torah properly. It's for that reason that the Torah was given in a midbar. No one owned anything. There was no property. There was no... Because you need that pure ownerlessness in order for people to focus entirely. It's worth all mentioning, and I heard this from my father Zatzal many years ago, that the Abarbanel himself went through this. Obviously, it's easy to oversimplify, but he himself, he was the minister of the treasury there back in Castile in the 1400s, and they threw him out with everyone else. And that's when he wrote his parish on the Torah. He never had time to write. When he was in the service of the queen and the king of Castile or Aragon or wherever they were, he couldn't. And then he lost everything. And then he said, and looking back, he was grateful. amongst all his other comments about it, that he was able then to write. And he says, V'kore ani al atzmi. If you're familiar with the expression that Gemara sometimes says about a Mishnah, it's almost like there's certain words missing from the Mishnah, and it should be read like this, Chisuri mechsera v'hachi katani. Certain something's missing should be read like this, says Abba Brunel, borrowing that terminology. That's me. Chisuri mechsera. I lost everything. V'hachi katani. And that's how I was able to learn. So he himself experienced the reverting of ownership. And interesting that as much as Yovel happens at the beginning of the year, it's not Rosh Hashanah, it's Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, as for in terms of the beginning of the year, is actually a time of Matan Torah. That's when we receive the second Luchos. And what's in conclusion, says Abba Brunel, it's also interesting that for all its special mitzvahs, Yovel also has the mitzvahs of Shemitah. You also lay off the land, which brings you back to the physical world. How so? Because as Chazal told us, the Torah itself is the final installment of the creation of the world. Everything was waiting for the sixth of Sivan, because without the tachlis of the world, even the world itself is yet shaky. And therefore, as much as every 7 years we recognize Hashem as creator of the world, we recognize it again when creation is realized, its purpose is realized, with the giving of the Torah. All those mitzvahs come back as part of Yovel. So that's plenty of food for thought. We'll leave it over there.